All right, you're on the Arms Room with Glenn.
And John.
And so excited to have
Adam on the boards today.
Adam. It's like a flashback.
I hope Mason's not enjoying life at AT right now.
Yeah.
I hope he is bored out of his skull and or sweating himself to death.
Mason is on an exclusive, all expenses paid
2-week vacation to sunny, crappy, communist California.
Uh-huh. Courtesy of the United States Army.
Woohoo!
So no Mason for the next couple of shows. I know you're all really sad about that.
I am kind of sad because, we'll still make fun of him. We just don't get to see his sad face when we do it.
Yeah, we just don't get to see his broken spirit.
Meh, whatever.
But part of me hopes that at some point in time he'll hear these shows and he'll know.
He'll know.
Yeah. Hey, do you see this cool bag of sand here?
Yeah.
This is actually an interesting bag of sand I got from a buddy of mine. This is Iwo Jima sand.
I have a ton of that at my house. I also have Tarawa sand.
Oh, Tarawa. Oh, kind of cool.
Yeah.
Cool little gift he brought back for me, so that was kind of neat. So, holy cow, we had an awesome and incredibly hot week last week.
Yeah, buddy.
I was out in the sun most of the week last week. Record-breaking heat here in Phoenix. We had days that were 118, 119. There was some nutty, absolutely nutty days. And we did the Independence Day Action Rifle match.
Yeah, we did.
On Independence Day.
113 degrees.
Woo!
30% humidity.
It was warm.
It was fantastic.
Sold out the event. I think we only had two shooters who ended up not showing up, so we had a total of 68 shooters.
Nice.
Yeah, instead of the 70 that we'd planned for, but great event. 5 stages of run and gun action. Lots and lots of fun. And one of the coolest parts about the event is how much we were able to raise for the Phoenix Children's Hospital, $2,010.
Nice.
Is what we raised, thanks to the shooters, to some anonymous donators, to Redwire Gear.
Word.
Who donated a percentage of their sales from the day. Had a lot of cool donations like that and ended up with $2,010. Awesome photos up on the Independence Training Facebook page if you want to go check them out of going to the store.
Did you hit your 5 carts?
4.
Oh! 4.
We got some kind of expensive things that took all up. Right. Like we got some of those Leapfrog tablets and some portable DVD players and a couple things like that were really high up on the wish list.
It's awesome, dude.
So yeah, so we got 4 full carts, but we took up the entire counter space when we went in to do donation. There was literally not a little tiny inch of counter space left, so that was pretty cool.
That's dope.
And it was great, man. It was a great event and a great result afterwards. Very, very happy. Let's see what else. We got some cool classes coming up in the next couple of months. We have a host of awesome classes coming up. So if you've been waiting to train with us or looking for an opportunity, now is a good time.
Yeah.
We've got a 2-day carbine class coming up this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Following that, we have IFAC and defensive handgun, which are possibly our two most popular classes back to back next weekend, or 2 weekends from now, I should say.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, after that, we're doing another medical class. We're doing a basic CPR class over at C2 Tactical. After that, in August, we've got a wound closure class. We've got field carbine. We've got invasive trauma interventions. We just have a ton of cool stuff coming up. And then in September, we got our precision rifle classes, our whole series happening in September and October. So all kinds of cool programs we have coming up. Make sure that you check those out. We're doing another one of those medical open houses.
Ooh.
August.
When are we doing that?
August the 12th.
Sweet. I don't have drill, so I can be there.
Perfect.
Fantastic.
Just settled on that with Sean over at the Tactical Medics. We'll be promoting the hell out of that. And August the 12th, another open house, just like we did last month. Very, very cool event. We had a great time last time, and we think we'll have another great time this time. So that's kind of what we're looking at right now. Went to a William April / Cecil Birch class this last weekend.
Oh.
Saturday, Sunday. I know. Did you have the drills?
I had the drills. Oh, okay. It was pretty terrible.
Oh, man. I'm sure it was nice and cool. Did you guys have to go outside a lot?
Oh, yeah. We spent Friday we spent all day, or the majority of the day, getting their trucks all loaded up and checking their gear and prepping their gear and all that stuff. And then we headed out to the range about 3:00. The OCs did. So first teams were showing up to run their lanes about 4:00. We ran until almost midnight.
Hmm.
And then we were back up at 4 a.m. We're back on the range at 4 a.m. And ran until about noon. And then we took a break for a few hours back on the range at 4 until about 9:30 or 10 o'clock Saturday night.
Man, that's
yeah,
long.
Got stormed on and rained on both nights.
Really? You guys had storms down there?
Yeah.
No kidding.
They were. We got lightning as close as 3. So we actually had to shut the demo. Yeah.
We had to shut our demo down. Here, but we had no rain, like, at all.
Yeah, we got, well, I'll say it was rain. It was like the wind blown, the storm is skirting around you kind of rain.
Nah.
Like, it was nice. You know, it was probably a half hour or so both nights of good sprinkles on us. Mm-hmm. It was nice. But, yeah, the weather was absolutely miserable, dude. It was hot and humid. Like, the heat doesn't bother me anymore. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I live in Phoenix.
Right.
It's going to be hot.
Yeah.
But when I always forget how much the monsoon season sucks. When you're at 112 and humidity's at like 30, 40, 50%, it's miserable. But it was fun, man. It's always fun.
Well, I enjoyed the William April class mostly because it was inside.
Shut up.
But, you know, we had William on the show, I don't know, a month or two or three or I don't know.
It's been a while.
It was not last week. It was sometime before that.
Yes.
If you haven't listened to that show, you need to.
Yeah.
William April is an amazing individual when it comes to what he knows about criminal behavior and why criminals do what they do and why violent criminals specifically do what they do. And probably the most important thing you get out of his class isn't like – he's not this dynamic speaker. You know, he throws some funny jokes in and stuff like that. But he's not a dynamic speaker. His presentations aren't incredibly colorful and engaging or anything like that. They're pretty bland as far as his PowerPoints are concerned.
It's hard to make that kind of information really exciting, to be honest about it.
So my point is that you go to one of his classes, don't expect to be like massively entertained, but do expect to be incredibly educated.
Yes.
And he's a good instructor, don't get me wrong, and he's got a great personality and all that, but he's not there to put on the show for you. He is definitely there to give you an intel dump. I mean, it is an amazing amount of information. Some of it applicable, some of it not as applicable, but I'll tell you this. Everybody, if I could find a way to incorporate his information into every single CCW program, I would do it. I mean, he's just the stuff he delivers about violent criminals. He changed his presentation a little bit from the last time I took it, and this is what he did. He was talking about, you know, the criminal, especially violent criminal, kind of moral, ethical code and why they do what they do and the fact that they do things in certain ways because they've essentially been morally affronted by what you've done and who you are. Who you are right now is offensive to them, just like –
who they
what
are.
They do is offensive to you, right? It's the same thing. We just don't think the same. And so he started showing these pictures of people around the world doing terrible things to children, killing them, stomping on them. We watched a video of this guy in China stomping this 2-year-old toddler on the sidewalk. I mean, these awful videos and photos and everything that we were shown that we got everybody in the room kind of riled up.
Yeah.
You know, and he was like, all right, cool. Now that you're all riled up, how riled up you are right now is the same amount of moral offense that your potential aggressor, your potential opponent in a violent confrontation feels towards you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to understand it. That's not a requirement.
Yep.
But not understanding it means that they're going to be that much more powerful. And so then his other question was, he was like, okay, so let's go back to this video where this guy's stomping on this toddler in China, right? And he's like, how many of you would not, if given the opportunity, jump through the screen right now and take care of that? It's like, of course, everyone's like, yeah, I'd kill that guy, right? And he's like, okay, what if after just watching him for, I mean, a solid 30 seconds, he's stomping on this toddler.
Yeah.
And he walks right up to him, knocks him down for no freaking reason. He's just walking down the sidewalk. The kid is in front of like
I've
a store.
I've seen this
like,
video.
And the guy just punches him and he's stomping on him. Like for no damn reason, right? And he's like, if that guy offered a half-hearted resistance, would you stop? And everyone's like, nah, kill him.
Kill that guy.
Right? He was just stomping a 2-year-old kid. Like absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah.
And he goes, okay, so now flip-flop that, right? And do you think that if you offer half-hearted resistance to someone who's just as morally offended by you as you just were by that, You know, would you, if your half-hearted resistance, would it stop them? Would your presence of a gun, would your not carrying around in the chamber, would your little, oh, I carry a 22 or I carry this because it's more, most convenient. Do you think your half-hearted resistance is going to stop them? And it was like, oh, shit. Kind of put things in perspective a little bit. It was a good presentation. You know, obviously I'm not really doing it full justice because you have to be there to truly have the experience. But his presentation is powerful, and a lot of the information he gives out is incredibly useful. He does have a couple of DVDs available through the Personal Defense Network run by our friend Rob Pincus. Check them out. Can't remember what they're called right now. They're sitting in my office right now across the hallway there. But just go to the PDN, Personal Defense Network DVD selections. Look up William April. April was two L's. Mm-hmm. And make sure you check that out. It is worth the purchase. It's good information, man. I mean, I think that's the biggest issue we run up against when we're doing training is trying to get people to understand the kind of opponents that they're coming up against. Everyone projects their reality onto their potential opponent, and they look at
everybody.
It from this,
everybody expects ahead. This movie, television bad guy, you know, that's been ingrained into our souls for so long. Mm-hmm. But if you look back at some of the older movies, like some of the older, they're kind of cheesy, but if you look back at some of the bad guys in some of the older flicks, that's more like what you're looking at. Like you look at some of the guys from some of the older Chuck Norris movies where they just don't give a shit about you or anything else you do, or the fact that you have a gun, or the fact that they're trying to murder 47 children in a schoolhouse. They don't care.
Right.
You know, but nowadays the way movies and television are going is the bad guys aren't really all that bad, and you kind of feel bad for them. You're like, oh, well, that guy kind of got, no! And shithead's a shithead's a shithead's a shithead. Sorry. All right, I'm good.
Well, the other thing too is that a lot of people don't really study. Like they carry a gun, but they don't study
because it's a fashion accessory.
And research. Well, even those who understand that it's not just a fashion accessory. Even those who strap a gun on every morning and go, "Hey, I put this gun on to to potentially save my life or kill bad guys." Right.
Right.
They still don't totally understand and they don't study the opponent that they're up against, right? It was like
– okay.
I have a friend who plays in Major League Baseball and he told
me – wait, hold on. You have friends?
Outside of this room, I have two. All right?
Okay. All right.
This guy's one of them. All right?
Okay. All right.
So he told me about how in Major League Baseball they study their opponents so
much.
Oh,
they study game tape.
Right?
Ridiculous.
Because he's like, if I'm coming up against a pitcher, I need to know. What does he like to throw? What does he most often throw? Does he have patterns in which he throws? Because that's how I'm going to get a hit. He's like, this ain't Little League where he's just going to throw some shit and I'm going to hit it, hopefully.
Right.
You know, he's like, everybody knows. If I'm going to hit out to left field, I need to know what's that left fielder going to do? How's he going to play this ball? You know, if I'm going to try to steal a base, I need to know how does this shortstop react? How does this second baseman react? Whatever. And he's like, so we study each other. And I find that we come into the shooting world. So I know that people do that in sports. You don't think Mayweather and McGregor are studying the shit out of each other right now? There's $120 million or whatever it is on the line. Yeah, they're studying each other. They already know
ad
a lot
nauseam.
About each other.
Ad nauseum. They're just watching that tape over and over and over.
Because that one time, if Mayweather or McGregor can just – if they can just identify one slip up that the other guy is doing consistently and then wait his ass out – and wait for that slip up, then they got a chance. And that's how – but yet as armed citizens, so often we do not study our opponents.
No.
We don't read books about them. We don't watch these – oh, these videos. I can't watch them. They make me sick. I watch them. I watch
them.
How
sick are you going to be when it's happening to you?
Because it makes me more – understanding of what they're capable of.
Oh, and it also makes you more prepared to deal with it when it starts happening.
I like to read the books about their psychology. I like to take classes like this. I like to study my opponent because here's why I carry a handgun. I'll say it on the air. I carry a handgun to kill bad people.
Word.
It's not just to save my – there's a lot of ways I can save my life. There's a lot of ways that I can save the lives of my family, that I can save innocent people, that I can handle active shooters, et cetera, et cetera. This gun on my hip is for killing bad guys, bad people. And so because of the reason that I carry it and the relatively narrow lane of circumstances that it's allowable for, it's really important that I study that opponent because he's not just going to come at me from 7 yards. I'm probably not going to see him coming. I don't do any felony stops or felony, you know, no-knock warrants or anything like that. So that's not my world. My world is sudden and violent attacks.
Yep.
And so I have to understand what I'm dealing with here and how to handle those kinds of events. Cecil Birch, of course, our friend, he's been on the show a lot of times. We teach with him. We train with him. He's a great guy. He taught the second half of each day. So every day was morning, 3 hours with William, and then 3 hours with Cecil basically in the afternoon. Roland, we did stand-up combatives day one and ground combatives day two. It was a lot of fun. I was able to help him teach the combatives portion, and it's always a lot of fun to get in there. We had 20 students in class, 13 of which – had taken independence training classes before, which makes me really happy.
That's awesome, dude.
Right? Because that means that our students are listening to the kinds of people that we're recommending that they go train with. When over half the class shows up and you know them, it's awesome. It was awesome. So, yeah, if you have a chance to train with William April, do so. I read the book. If you listen to the show he did with us, he recommended a book to us called Why They Kill, written by Richard Rhodes. Phenomenal book. He's recommended several other books to me that are also very, very good. But the Why They Kill book is a pretty easy reader.
Nice.
So it's a good book about a famous criminologist and sociologist called or named Lonnie Athens and his life of violence. And basically, this guy should have turned into a violent. He was a violent criminal. He should have turned into a worse violent criminal instead. He kind of came over to the light side, so to speak, and started teaching about it. It was very, very interesting work. And the case studies in there are harsh and they're brutal and they are direct and they come straight from the source. And it's amazing. The information in there about the mentality and how violent criminals are created and what we're dealing with when we have to combat them is incredible. So if you have a chance to train with William April, please do. If you have a chance to train with Cecil Birch, please do. Obviously, if you have a chance to train with Independence Training, please do.
Yeah, come on out.
So, all right, Redwire Gear Moment, you.
All right, so I don't know if we've mentioned this on the show or not before, but we've got a friend of ours that's a PJ, and he was telling us about an incident because everybody carries a tourniquet. Majority of people carry a CAT tourniquet. He was telling about an incident. They were out on the range doing some shooting, doing some firearms training, and the way they had their tourniquets, it was windlass out. One of his fellow PJs tripped, fell, something, the windlass on his CAT became entangled in the trigger on his M4, shot himself in the leg, like badly, like out of training, out of there, like career over, right? In a matter of seconds, they ended up losing part of his leg.
Below the knee.
Yeah. Lost his leg below the knee. So if you carry a CAT tourniquet on the front, side, back of your vest, put the windlass in. All right, there you go. Red wire gear moment, done.
Awesome. All right, helps you follow one of the firearm safety rules, of course, which is keep anything out of the trigger guard until you're ready to fire.
Mm-hmm.
Red wire gear moment brought to you by redwiregear.com. Check them out. Lots of good stuff. Have you ever noticed sometimes when I post photos of like my competition gear, how much red wire gear stuff there is?
All the gear.
It's a lot. It's a lot over the years. Holy cow. All right. Our topic for today is desert survival concepts and what to do to kind of prepare for everyday emergencies. This is not really, though it may kind of digress a little bit into it. This is not
really.
No, it's
going to digress. It always does.
Well, this is not really a you're lost in the desert and here's how to survive.
No, this is you're a normal person and you live in central or southern Arizona or parts of New Mexico, Utah, Texas, California, like, you know.
In situations where you may get off road and be stranded, or you may be hiking and be stranded. And so we're going to talk about some of those concepts.
Or you just get stranded on the freeway.
Or you get stranded on the freeway. Yeah. Which happens a lot. The I-17, actually, as I was coming home yesterday from the gym, from the fighting gym, I was coming back and I saw that the I-17 North was closed again.
Yep. Another fire jumped at Bloody Basin.
No.
It's actually creeping over the hill on the east side of my house.
Oh, man.
Like on the east side of the freeway. I was sitting out on the porch last night and I saw the fire creeping over the top of the mountain, which is weird because that all burned out like 2 years ago, too. That whole section burned out about 2 years ago, but it's going to burn out again tonight.
Hopefully, it'll slow it down a little bit.
Yeah.
So, the first thing that we have to talk about, and the thing, and this is a topic that bothers me to no end.
Uh-oh.
Because...
Am I guilty of this thing?
No, definitely not.
Okay, all right.
Because of how little I see people take it seriously.
Mm.
And from a backcountry rescue perspective, I will tell you that this is one of the number one reasons that people have to be rescued, not just during the summer, but also during the winter times, fall months, et cetera. And it is the one thing that our body requires
beer.
To survive.
Oh, wait. No, that's not right.
Pepsi.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same as water, apparently.
Well,
water, right?
Water.
Nothing replaces water.
Nope.
Soda doesn't replace water. Beer doesn't replace water. Liquor doesn't replace water. Gatorade doesn't replace water. Energy drinks don't replace water.
I don't know. Energy drinks do a pretty good job.
Nothing replaces water. You can make water taste differently if you'd like. You can add things to water, and that's fine, all right? But nothing replaces water. And what amazes me is that people still leave their house without water.
My favorite thing to see is, and I haven't been out doing it in a couple of years because I'm super busy. Whatever. I've been lazy. We'll say I've been lazy the last few years. But I used to go and hike like Camelback and South Mountain, stuff like that. I used to hike quite a bit. And I'd see people out on these trails with like one 16-ounce water bottle. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you're retarded.
Mm-hmm. You're going to die.
You are absolutely retarded. It's like I'm going for a 30-minute hike. I'm carrying 100 ounces of water in a Camelback. It's like you're an idiot.
It's not just planning for what activity you're going to do.
Yeah.
It's also planning for the activity you don't expect to do.
Right.
Right? Like, yeah, maybe you're only going for a 30-minute hike until you take a tumble off the hill and you break your ankle. And now you got to lay there baking in the sun waiting for search and rescue to show up.
Work on that tan. Tan fat looks better than white fat, kids.
Getting that sweet tan. All right. Oh, God, Adam.
Oh.
Please continue.
It was hot.
Adam's raising his shirt up. That is not tan fat, buddy.
No. If you tan at it, it'll look better, I promise. That's advice I got.
That rub-on tan.
John, I got that advice from Navy EOD Tech when I was going through EOD school.
There you go, tan fat. So there's another desert survival tip, I guess. But water. And don't even leave your house without water. Look, these days we have the Hydro Flasks. We have 1,000 offshoot brands of the Hydro Flask, some kind of vacuum vacuum.
And let's not forget the good old-fashioned Stanley.
The good old Stanley thermoses. Yeah, whatever, right? Don't care what kind of water bottle you take with you. If you walk out of your house, you should have a water bottle with you. Mm-hmm. There's no exception.
Yeah.
In the wintertime, I have my water bottle. In the summertime, I have my water bottle. I don't go anywhere.
I have two, actually. I carry one in my backpack, and I ended up buying one of those.
I saw you bought. Yeah.
The
growler.
Growler. Thank you. Holy crap, words. Ended up buying a growler, and I just keep it in the truck.
John got me a growler as a gift a couple weeks ago, big old 64-ounce Hydro Flask, basically, and phenomenal.
Yeah.
I use it every day. It just rotates from my truck to the house, from my house to the truck. I drink – when I'm going and doing all-day training, I'll drink that plus my 32-ounce and another typically 60 ounces or so. It's not uncommon for me when we're out there training in the heat to drink a couple gallons of water pretty easily.
I go through about a gallon a day when we're out on the range.
So it's like, look, take water with you when you leave the house.
And before that, this is the one thing that a lot of people neglect is just stay hydrated, period.
Yeah.
You know,
well, yeah.
Drink water constantly, all the time. Don't drink beer and Monster and then, oh, I'm going to go hike today and I'm going to take this 100 ounces of water. I'm going to take this one bottle of water. You're not going to be where you need to be and you're going to dehydrate faster. You're going to suck faster and you'll die faster, honest about it.
One thing that a lot of us do with our kids, right, is if they're like, you go out to eat and they're like, hey, I want a soda, we make them have some water first, right?
Oh, my kids, that's the one thing that has been rigid in my family. My kids do not drink soda.
So it's like, okay, if you want any kind of other drink, you're going to have to drink water first, right? So that's the same thing that I do for myself. Like if I'm at home and I go, man, I'd like a cup of milk or I'd like a glass of juice or something like that, then it's – I always drink a cup of water first, and then usually I drink some water after just because my body starts to crave water. The more you drink water, the more you'll crave water. And I have heard people go like, I don't like water. I don't like the way it tastes. Well, then get a filter. Some water does have a taste, definitely.
Well, water here in Phoenix, your tap water has a taste.
So if you don't like the taste, fine. Get a filter and filter it out. We'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, get a filter. If you want to add some additives, here's the ones I use on a regular basis. These are the three I use the most. That's the Camelback Elixir, the Hammer Nutrition Fizz, and Wilderness Athlete. Mm. Wilderness Athlete's definitely my favorite.
It's also the most expensive.
It is the most expensive. I get it usually from like Sportsman's Warehouse or Bass Pro or something like that. Camelback Elixirs, Hammer Nutritions, they can be had at just about any outdoor store, Big Five, Dicks, REI, whatever.
The Nun, N-U-U-N.
Yeah, the Nun. I've used that.
Those are really good.
Nun is good. So any of those will – they will add necessary electrolytes to the water, and they will also – it will also help the water taste better.
Yeah.
So that it's easier to drink, and that's fine. But when people tell me like, oh, I don't like water, I'm like, well, then you're an idiot. I mean, like you got to stop that way of thinking. You need to drink more water. You know, the most biggest issues we have health-related are almost all because of chronic dehydration. Like I've studied this a lot over the years because I'm pretty passionate about people drinking water because I've rescued a lot of shitheads who don't drink enough freaking water, right? And so it's like joint pain, fatigue, sleeplessness, mood swings, so many of these things that so many people experience every day are because of a lack of hydration, chronic stomach aches, bowel problems, et cetera, they're all because – not all. They're likely because of chronic dehydration. So it's like be drinking water. When people say it's a gallon per person per day for emergency purposes, that is a minimum. That is the minimum. It's a gallon per person per day. You should be drinking – a lot of water. Now, on that note, you also have to be doing other things other than just drinking water. Hyponatremia is what happens when your body gets so much water, but it doesn't have any way to absorb the water into it. So that's another issue that we see, especially here in the deserts, that people are just drinking water with
you
no –
you flush all of your salts and electrolytes.
So, yeah, they flush all the stuff out, and then their body has no way to absorb it, so they end up swelling up, and your body is still basically dehydrating and dying because they don't have the capability to absorb the water. So still include food. The kind of rule of food and water in emergency situations or even just general daily life is you shouldn't be eating if you're not drinking water. You can drink water without eating, but it's not a good idea. But you shouldn't be eating if you're not drinking water because eating requires water for digestion, and we can't use up that necessary water only for digestion. So it's really important to drink water and also eat some things. So those additives we just mentioned are great. Some, you know, salty snacks are fine. Anything with, you know, sodium, potassium, bananas, things like that are great. They're going to help your body absorb that water in. The Gatorade Zeros are actually pretty good. I'm not a fan of Powerade Gatorade because they have way too much sugar. But the Gatorade Zeros are actually pretty good for helping your body to replenish needed electrolytes.
Don't get taken by organic Gatorade either. It's stupid. It's a marketing ploy. Just stop buying that crap.
I didn't know it existed.
Yeah, I've seen it a few times. It's dumb. It's still water, sugar, and some flavoring. I don't give a shit if it's organic or not. Stop.
So to talk also about some water things is going to be water filters, and there's some filters that I recommend for daily use. So, you know, I'm not for emergency filters. I'll say this. I like Katadyn's. I like all the stuff from MSR.
Life Straw's pretty handy.
I love the Life Straws. Those are all great. The Katadyn Vario, the MSR Waterworks, and the Life Straws are what I use most of the time when I'm out there. The Platypus Gravity Bag is also – I use that a lot when I'm on big hiking trips with multiple people because I can do 4 liters of filtration at a time.
Nice.
Which is awesome. And so that's great. But for daily use stuff, the Berkey Black.
Yeah.
Buy a Berkey, upgrade to the black filter, the Berkey Black. You can filter your pool water.
Nice.
So you talk about emergency situations where water may be cut off or, you know, anything from a short-term disruption of daily utilities to a long-term, you know, whatever, Russian paratroopers type situation. I've got 12,000 gallons of water sitting in my backyard that without the ability to filter is useless to me. You know, so the Berkey Black is a great filtration system. I know a lot of people use it on a daily basis. They want to filter out the heavy metals and the chemicals and everything that come through their drinking water.
Yeah, their tap
so
water.
They just fill that thing up every morning and then they just drink out of that. And they just don't drink out of the tap. So that's a great filtration. I'll look into that. The Berkey Black, hands down, the best filter I have ever found. Not the cheapest one, but you can also build your own. You can actually buy the filters themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then like with like a couple of buckets and some other things, you can build your own. It wouldn't look good sitting on your kitchen counter like the professional Berkey does, but it certainly saves you about $100. I want to say the Berkey Black is maybe $300-$400. But it's a really, really good system.
Yeah.
Really, really good system. So look at that if you've got water in your area that's not very good. Check the water table results in your area. They test it. It's available through your through whoever you're buying your water from, whether that's the city or utility company or whatever. You can get their water test results and look at how much stuff is in there. Don't freak out if there's a little bit of arsenic or whatever.
Yeah, there's so much. There's so much
natural
stuff in the
water, so to speak, in the ground. There's so much of that stuff you're going to get. But if you want to remove all that shit, you're welcome to. Just remember that when you totally filter all that stuff out, you are sometimes filtering out some necessary minerals, et cetera. So make sure you're replenishing those with a daily vitamin or something along those lines. Don't just drink nothing but filtered water.
And stop buying stop buying bottled water. That's another big thing. I buy some bottled water because it's easy for me to keep bottled water in my truck.
Sure.
Right? It's easy to keep water bottles in a cooler when I'm out at the range, like stuff like that. But I do not consume bottled water on a regular basis. It's not regulated. I just read a really interesting article in a magazine called Experience Life, and it was all about tap water and groundwater and how our tap water and our groundwater are more closely regulated, controlled, and monitored than anything that you buy at the store in a bottle. And generally speaking, if you're buying it at like Circle K, you're paying more per gallon for your water than you are for your gas.
Really?
Most of the time. If you're buying like the 20-ounce water bottles and stuff from Dasani or whatever company your flavor palette prefers. So water in those containers is generally – like from convenience stores is generally more expensive than gas is per gallon.
That is interesting. So
buy a filter. Even if you don't buy a Berkey Black or whatever, buy a Brita if you're concerned about your water filter, your water in your home. Or, you know, check your reports. See what you need. See what you think's wrong. Most water companies are required to publish the report annually. You can contact your local health department. I know here in Phoenix, you can call up the Maricopa County Health Department and they'll give you all of that information and tell you where to find it. It's all available online.
Interesting. Well, there you go.
Boom.
All right. So to get off the water a little bit, let's talk about some basic kind of daily emergency survival stuff, especially here in the desert. One of my big kind of daily survival plans is to let people know where you're at all times.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in the desert. When we're dealing with, I've just got to jog over here and take this crazy road somewhere to go to a meeting or to go see, you know, a client or to go do some training. We'd be training all over the place. Just let people know where you're at all times. In today's world, this is the easiest thing to do. Just text somebody, right? So it's basic. Wherever I go, I let my wife know. She's my trusted other, right?
Right.
So share your plans with your trusted other, whoever that may be, whether it's a roommate or a friend, your parents, whoever it is. It doesn't even matter if they live in the same state as you. They don't even have to live with you. Just someone that you trust that's going to pay attention to go, you know what? John said he was going to be home 30 minutes ago, and it's been an hour, and I haven't heard from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like that's the kind of person that you want to share this information with. So just let people know where you're going and if you're going to be late. So I'll, you know, as an example, this morning I had to go drop my daughter off at a place. And so, you know, I leave the house. I get to the place. And I tell my wife I'm at the place,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I'm leaving the place, and as I'm coming to the office, I tell my wife I'm headed to the office.
Mm-hmm.
You know? She knows it takes about 25, 30 minutes to get to the place. She knows it takes about 25, 30 minutes to get over here. So if she doesn't hear from me in that time frame, then she knows. Mm-hmm. Something's up. What's wrong? Did I just careen off the highway because I'm – tire blew out? Did someone hit me? Am I laying upside down in a ditch somewhere? Like, I want people to come look for me if I don't show up in time. And oftentimes people think about this when they're going hiking or camping or whatever. Like, oh yeah, let people know.
Daily thing.
Let
man.
A trusted person know where you are at all times. At all times. That way people know, at least, the very least, they know where the last place you were and where you're headed. And they can start to draw. Now, this is also important to teach your kids to do. from the survival aspect, because now if your kids don't show up, you've got a much better chance of where they were and where they're headed. So let's say your kid gets snatched up by somebody. Mm. All right. Now you have some capability to go, they left here, what security cameras are there? They were headed here, what security cameras are there? And along this most common route that they travel, what security cameras are available?
Yep.
As opposed to having no damn idea.
Oh, they just left to go to the park. Which park? When did they leave? Yeah. Where did they go?
They went for a bike ride. Where were they going? Oh, when my kids go, hey, I want to go for a bike ride. Cool. Where are you going for a bike ride? Oh, we just want to ride around the neighborhood. Where in the neighborhood are you going?
Yeah.
We're going to go north. And where are you going to stop? Okay, we're going to stop here. Oh, we're going to ride down to the shopping center. Okay. Where are you going in the shopping center? Yeah. Around here, shopping centers are pretty damn big. Where are you going? You know, and it, so it's just one of those things where having an easy daily plan is one of those. It also helps, by the way, in when you're interacting in society to help you look not lost and confused, which is a huge target for bad guys, right? If you just look like you always know where you're supposed to be going and you always know where you're headed, then the likelihood of you being snagged up by somebody is lower, right?
God, I think about that. I don't think I ever told my parents where I was going. I just leave my house on my bike on Saturday morning and then come back for dinner. Like
yeah, we didn't do it as much, but they still knew where we were. If we said we're going down to the river, they knew what part of the river we would be.
Yeah, yeah. Like, hey, I'm going to the park to play baseball. But then from the park playing baseball, we'd end up at like the library or somebody's house.
Think about
house
how hard it was to stay in comms back then.
Yeah, it's true too.
You know what I mean? We'd have cell phones. Man, so if you weren't somewhere where there was a payphone or a landline.
God, payphones?
Yeah.
Jesus.
If you weren't somewhere where there was a payphone or a landline, you weren't communicating with anybody.
Yeah. Smoke signals, bro.
Nowadays it's so easy. Yeah. So easy to stay in comms.
Yep.
Right? And so that's another issue. Like, that's always one survival thing that always bothers the shit out of me. Like, when people go like, well, you know, when I was a kid, we didn't wear our seatbelts and look at me, I'm fine. Yeah, what about the other thousands of people who aren't fine, you fucking idiot? Like, welcome to the advancement of technology.
What about all those kids that still get coloring books for Christmas?
Yeah. Like, it's advancement of technology. Use it to your advantage.
Yeah.
It always bothers me when people – it's the same. It was like when Glocks came out, right? And everyone was like, oh, that polymer piece of shit, right? It's like
Tupperware guns,
people
man.
People have such a hard time accepting change. Look, man, if it can make me – safer and help me make my family more – why wouldn't I use it? People are like, I don't use technology. It's stupid. You're fucking stupid. That's the problem, right? There's nothing wrong
with technology. Oh, there's the Glenn we all know and love. There he is.
We're supposed to stop dropping F-bombs, right? But like that really, really gets under my skin.
No, yeah, I totally agree.
You know,
because
I'm like, why wouldn't you use this great advantage to stay safer, to let people know where you're at, you know, to keep your family updated with what you've got going on? Why would you not use it? Oh, I don't use that stupid crap. You're the stupid crap. You're the reason it's so hard to advance, you caveman. Why don't you go bash something with a fucking stick, idiot? All right, I'm done with my rant. Now, that being said, don't rely exclusively on your cell phones.
And there we go, kids.
It's also important to make sure that your whole emergency plan doesn't revolve around the use of a cell phone.
True.
Because cell phones, batteries die.
Screens get broken.
Screens get busted. They get dropped. Things get stolen. So yeah. I'm walking, you know, my kid's walking down the street. He's got his phone. Let's say he gets kind of like a little strong arm robbery action. You know, they take my kid's money. They take his bike. They take his phone. And
I don't think I'd rob your kid.
What's next?
I don't think I'd rob your oldest kid. I think he'd probably kill me.
He's got a shank. Yeah.
Yeah.
He'll shank you.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
So
see this face? Not surprised.
So it's like now he's on foot patrol and he has no way to call. Or does he, right? Are there other ways to communicate? Teach your kids how to walk into some place and say,
I need to use your phone.
Excuse me, I need to use your phone.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, teach your kids to be resourceful.
Used to be for us, hey, go find a payphone.
Yeah, we carry a quarter with us.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck finding a payphone these
days. I
can't
even tell you the last time I saw a payphone.
The last time I saw a legitimate payphone, it was in an airport.
That's true. I do see payphones in airports. You're right.
There's usually like one in every like concourse or something.
Yeah, you're right about that, so people can make collect calls and all that.
Yeah. Collect calls. Oh, they have plenty of payphones at jails still.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Because they take all your phones and stuff away from you.
Yeah, so they take everything else away from you.
So teach your kids other signaling methods. Now, this also goes For other types of communication capabilities, like consider radios. You know, we had
the ham radio thing.
Ted Hardin on here a couple times in the last few months, talking about the radios. You know, and how to get involved in hams and how to get involved in CB and how to think of that way. So now, if I get stranded somewhere where there's not very good cell phone service, I still have the possible capability going, okay, maybe my cell phone's not going to work, but hey, I can flip on this radio. So maybe I'm stranded on the I-17 in a dead spot.
There's a couple of shitty spots that I know of.
I've been in two really nasty vehicle accidents both times. Well, the first time, their cell phones really didn't exist, so I didn't have one.
Yeah.
And the second time, my cell phone was dead spot. So both times, I lacked the ability. So the first time, help was called for me. The second time, I had to flag someone down. I used a road flare, which is a really good thing to have in your vehicle. These days, better than road flares are chem lights, glow sticks, bright flashlights. Back then it was halogen flashlights. They all sucked. So a road flare was bright, right? But nowadays a glow stick is a weird smell, doesn't it? I love the smell of road flares, man. So it's like I had to flag someone down. So how do you safely flag somebody down? That's something you should know about.
Not by standing in the middle of the road.
Not by standing in the middle of the road.
That's a good way to get run down.
Yeah.
Yeah, Adam could just like pull his shirt up.
Pull his shirt up.
The glow.
So another big element of preparedness, other than comms, is also your vehicle.
Yeah, basic vehicle maintenance.
Pat was on here last week talking about basic vehicle maintenance and the things that we're looking for: tire inflation.
Yep.
Batteries.
Yep. Coolant levels, especially out here or in extreme colds.
What do we carry in our vehicles? Our vehicle is something that's with us all the time. So do we carry extra water?
Yes.
Do we carry some food?
A little bit.
Do we carry some medical supplies?
Yes.
A fire extinguisher?
Yes.
Those kinds of things that we might need in an emergency. Everyone's kits can be a little different based on what their needs are.
Let's go back. Let's digress just a little bit on this vehicle thing.
Okay.
Do you have a four-way lug wrench in your car?
Yeah, a star wrench, yeah.
Because if you don't, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Because that's way easier. Do you have a legitimate bottle jack in your car? That will actually lift your tire high enough off of the ground to change it.
Yeah.
I learned that lesson the pseudo hard way.
Yeah. When the scissor lift didn't work?
Well, the scissor lift, it wasn't even the scissor. I didn't even try it because mine is behind the seat in my truck that is closed off by two child seats.
Ah.
So that's more trouble than it's worth on the side of the freeway. So I bought a bottle jack. The first bottle jack I bought was not large enough. It did not lift the vehicle high enough. So, you know, check that stuff out.
Think about carrying around like an extra power source for both your vehicle and or your cell phone. You know, if your car is totally dead, let's say no battery, can't get the battery to fire up. A lot of the jump packs, like what Pat mentioned last week, are great these days. They're lithium ion batteries. They're very small. They're the size of a small tablet. And, you know, they'll jumpstart your truck.
Dude, I've got one that's not much bigger than my Mophie for my cell phone.
Yeah, they're super cool. And they've got when I mean tablet, I don't mean like a 10-inch screen. I'm talking about one of the small little, you know, 5 or 6-inch screen ones. But they've got a light on them. They've got USB ports for plugging in USB devices. They'll charge. I mean, if it can jumpstart my truck, it's definitely going to charge my cell phone a couple of times. Yeah. So that's, you know, that's something. And that's something, too. You can grab that little pack and you can take it with you when you travel. They're TSA approved, most of them. So I can travel with them. I can go places. It's these little emergencies that we want to think about where I need some type of communications and I'm relying on my cell phone and it doesn't have power, then I'm screwed, right? Obviously, don't just rely on your cell phone like we talked about, but definitely think about power for your vehicle, or for your cell phone. In big emergencies, another big consideration to make is, as much as possible in the desert or on the freeway, broken down or whatever, is to stay with your vehicle. Now, staying with your vehicle may not always be the best idea if you're very close to a dangerous situation, like right off the side of the road. Go ahead and get some distance, but at least stay near the vehicle because it's harder to find somebody once they've left their vehicle. And your vehicle also has a lot of useful stuff in it, and a lot of that stuff can't be carried away. You know, so it's important to be able to stay with your vehicle.
If you take one of the doors and you're carrying it with you and you get hot, you can just roll the window down.
Oh, good.
So actually, speaking of the freeway thing, if you have to get off the side of the freeway for whatever reason, you're in the middle of nowhere, you missed the last gas station, you got to take a piss, right? Pull as far off of the road as you can safely. In Arizona, avoid pulling off into high, tall grass.
Yeah,
so you don't because start a fire. Will start a fire. If you can,
started that way.
If you can, pull behind a guardrail, pull behind a barrier. Get people out of your car if it's conducive to do so, and get them a little bit further away from the car. But pull as far off of the road as you can, and be as safe as you can off the side of the as far off the side of the road as you can. Like, there's a couple of spots between here and my house, and I can pull like 100 yards off of the freeway.
Yeah,
not at all concerned about getting hit.
Yeah,
you know, so. Something to think about.
One thing that we've talked about a lot, John, when we're talking about everyday carry and the EDC concept is what we leave our house with. So we talked about, okay, leave your house with water, right? So now, and I know, you know, John's a huge fan of flip-flops. He wears them almost daily.
Good God.
That's
more retards that I hope have to be rescued off the sides of freaking hiking trails. It's people that go hiking mountains in flip-flops.
Flip-flops.
You're an idiot.
You're probably going
to hurt. Your 99-cent store, Old Navy, wherever you bought your crap, you're an idiot.
Not going to work.
Not going to cut it, bro.
Seen it fail more than it's worked.
Yes, so, absolutely.
It might work sometimes. It might work every now and then. I'm telling you. I'm here to tell you.
It works great. When you're going from your air-conditioned car to the air-conditioned store to the air-conditioned car. Wear flip-flops all you want. I don't care. That's your problem.
Yeah, that's fine.
You're an idiot
around,
anyway,
around town is one thing, right? Like, I'll wear sandals sometimes, like, to the gym or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not going to wear them where I anticipate. Now, here's the thing. I still actually always have shoes in my truck.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, dude.
Just in case I need some shoes, right? But like if I'm just going, hey, man, I'm just going to go over here and I'm going to throw some flip flops on when this class, you know, headed over to the Jits gym. I'm just going to wear my sandals.
Yeah.
I can take my shoes off as soon as I walk in the door. So yeah, I'm just going to wear my sandals. If something happens, I still got my shoes in the vehicle. Mm-hmm. Right. So how we leave the house dressed has an impact on our survival rate of the day.
Yes, it does.
In the hot summer weather, a lot of people are like, I'm wearing shorts and a tank top and sandals and no hat, and I'm going to go out in the world today.
And then you're going to hike 5 miles when your car breaks down, and you're going to die of dehydration.
And exposure.
You're going to get sunburnt beyond belief.
It's going to heat stroke. Heat strokes are going to kill them. Yeah, because they have no way to protect themselves. Oftentimes when I'm outside training or like IDARM or whatever.
I wear a long-sleeve shirt, a hat, and I carry a chamois.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, I'm in pants with boots and a long sleeve shirt and a big brimmed hat and a chamois. And people are like, wow, you're really covered up for the sun. And I'm like, I will guarantee you right now that my body core temperature is less than yours.
Yep.
Part of the reason that I do well in hot weather is that I emulate the people
that settled this crap before air conditioning.
Who lived in terrible weather. I look historically and say, don't see a lot of them pioneers in shorts and tank tops. Wonder why. Don't see a lot of Bedouins in shorts and tank tops.
Well, they wear,
wonder why.
They wear dresses and
but they have a reason for why they do all that.
Oh, yeah.
You know? They basically have a built-in EVAP cooler.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, they have a
the man jams system. Are super comfy, bro. Oh, my God.
And basically, that thing soaks with sweat, wicks it away from the body. The giant robes allow airflow. Airflow comes up.
It's great.
Bam, EVAP cooler. Dude's a built-in EVAP cooler. You know, so you look at people who live in the desert. We live in the desert, but really we live in air conditioning.
Yes.
Right?
We live in a desert environment, but we live in our air conditioned home.
You know, we walk from air conditioning, like you said. And so for us, we're outside a lot, but in the end, I still go home to air conditioning. I still climb in my air conditioned vehicle.
I'm still in air conditioning more than I'm not.
Whatever. These people live. So I look at people who live and I go, when you live here and there's no way out of the environment, how do they dress? And I emulate that when I am out. And about when I'm out on a day hike or something, I'm wearing boots and pants and a long sleeve shirt because my limit of exposure helps me to stay cooler. And people are like, I feel so hot in these clothes. And it's like, you don't actually. You think you do, but you actually don't.
And
your body core temperature is lower.
It actually kind of leads into another conversation you and I had a while back about buying quality clothing for that very reason. It's like, I've got a couple of nice long sleeve like hike, camp, fishing style shirts.
Yeah,
oh,
outdoors.
God, they're phenomenal.
Outdoor design shirts.
You know, they're light, they're loose, they fit right, they do what they say they're going to do, and they make my life much better.
So real quick, Mason just sent me a text. I emailed or I texted him earlier and said, hey, how's your Army vacation going? So he texts, here's a little word from Mason. He says, I'm living the dream, Glenn, sleeping on a cot in a shit tent with no power or AC, eating MREs three times a day, and sitting in an 8-hour class on the BAT system. Playing a game called The Lies My Recruiter Told Me. I'll add that part. So
that's fantastic.
So how you dress, right, the type of clothing, not just clothing. So fine, we're not saying don't wear shorts and flip-flops. And
I wear shorts more often
I wear shorts and flip-flops, like, and sandals and a tank top or whatever sometimes.
Like, even when I'm at the range a lot of times, I wear shorts because I'm comfortable in shorts. I understand the limitations that my shorts give me. I understand the possibility of what could happen. It's a choice I make.
Sure.
But I will throw on a long sleeve shirt. I will throw on a boonie hat. I will throw the chamois on. You know,
I see so many people come through training classes, all day classes, and you know, we always put in our course outline, pants are recommended. And people show up and they've got their legs out, you know, in shorts, and they hose it down with freaking sunscreen or whatever. By the end of the day, all that's worn off.
Oh yeah.
And the whole back of their legs are just lobster red.
Crispy.
And so sucks. I see that kind of stuff and I go, look, I get it. I want to be relaxed and comfortable, and I wear shorts and I wear sandals and I'll wear a short sleeve t-shirt or whatever. I'm wearing a short sleeve t-shirt and pants and tennis shoes right now. Like, I don't mind going out in the sun with this. That being said, when I know I'm going to be in exposure or I have a higher likelihood of being in exposure to the sun, I dress appropriately and I prepare for if I may have to have a high exposure. If I leave the house in sandals, I throw shoes in the truck.
Oh,
you know, because
I never leave the house in sandals.
I know John never leaves. John has a very harsh thing against sandals. I don't have as harsh of a thing against sandals. I'm fine with going into town in sandals. But I have shoes in the truck in case something happens where I need shoes. Not on the side of the road changing a tire.
That's
I don't want
to
do
that in flip-flops.
In sandals. I don't want to do that, you know? What I leave gear-wise, and we talk about EDC, and this isn't going to turn into a gun conversation. So I'm just talking about other items like chapstick.
It's in my pocket every freaking day.
And your lips get chapped. When you lick your lips, it steals more moisture away from your body.
So that's like the most common thing I come away with after teaching a class or being at the range all day. Because I have my chapstick, but I sometimes forget to use it. So I end up with like my lips like hurt for like a day afterwards. Yeah. It's like, Yeah, that works. Just put some airwax on, like Adam said.
Yeah, that's good.
Cool. It's a little gross, but I guess if it works, whatever, caveman.
Whatever, man. So chapstick, sunglasses. Protect your eyes, you know, to increase your vision capability. I don't always wear sunglasses around, but I always have sunglasses available.
I wear sunglasses almost religiously.
And so it's like it's one of those things where you don't have to have all the gear on you using it 24/7, but you need to have the equipment available to you.
Yeah, access.
So yeah, if I break down on the side of the road and I can't get far enough off the highway and I got to step two and I got to get off the road a little bit. All right. So what am I going to do? Well, if I'm wearing sandals, I'm going to change into the shoes that I brought in my truck. I'm going to grab my little, you know, fold-out GI blanket or survival blanket or whatever that sheet, whatever it is you carry around with you for extra protection. And I'm going to go to the side of the road, and I'm going to put on my sunglasses. And I'm going to throw on a little bit of chapstick. It's about to get super hot. And maybe I'll throw on the boonie hat I keep in my truck. And then I'm going to throw that thing over my head as I'm sitting there on the side of the road. Now I got shade. I got protection. I'm going to maybe throw on, if I carry, you know, if my range bag is with me or something, I'll have some sunscreen. I'll throw that on. I'm going to grab my nice cold, you know, Hydro Flask bottles full of water, ice water. I'm going to take those with me. I'm going to use their actual physical coldness of the bottle itself to help keep me cool, as well as obviously putting the water in my body. Remember, water does you – don't ration water. Does you no good in the bottle.
Nope.
Only does you good if it's in your body.
Yep.
You know, and I keep some of those electrolyte tablets in the console of my truck. So if I get tired of the taste of water, I just drop a couple in my bottle and boom, I got grape or grapefruit or lemon lime or orange or whatever the hell flavor
they
I have.
They need to make a whiskey flavored one.
A whiskey flavored, that would be legit. I would be drunk off of water all the time.
All the time.
So it's just it's thinking about if things go wrong today.
Yeah.
How am I going to contact people?
It's simple too.
How am I going to protect myself from the elements? How am I going to be safe? If my truck breaks down in the middle of the night and I hit the flashers, well, that's not necessarily going to get people's attention. I hit the flashers when I pull off to take a piss because I don't want someone to run into me.
Yep.
You know, so it's like I pull off as far as I can, bam, I hit the flashers.
Out here, a thing, the haboobs, the sandstorm.
Yeah.
Get as – if you have to stop on the freeway.
You know what the worst thing about haboobs is?
What's that?
when you get two haboobs.
No, well,
because then you got yourself some haboobies.
Dad joke of the day brought to you by Glenn Stilson. Well played, sir. Well played.
Uh-huh. You're welcome.
But get off. Don't follow. Yeah. And on that note, we're just going to go ahead and end the show,
So on that note, go ahead.
Don't follow taillights in those types of, or any type of inclement weather. Don't follow taillights. You can get confused and you'll ass in somebody that's on the side of the freeway.
Well, wasn't it just last week we were talking about that dust storm in New Mexico that killed like six or seven people?
Yeah. So get as far off of the road. Turn your flashers on. Stay in your car. Unless you absolutely have to leave your car in that type of situation, stay in your car. That thing is designed to keep you alive if something hits it. It's weird. It's more that technology crap.
You know,
seatbelts are dumb. Seatbelts save lives.
I have absolutely, without beyond the shadow of a doubt, been saved twice by seatbelts. And I would say that my oldest son has been saved from great injury in a separate vehicle accident.
That I know of.
Yeah, and in an accident I wasn't even a part of, but he's been saved at least once from grave injury because of that. So, yeah, seatbelts absolutely save lives. Use modern equipment. But, yeah, be aware. In the darkness, how are you going to signal people? Road flares are short. They last for like 10 or 15 minutes. That's it.
Unless you've got a friend that's a cop, and then they may or may not be able to help you out with some of the real ones.
Even
those will burn for about a half hour.
Yeah, I was going to say, they only burn for about 30 minutes. So, but a chem light, I can have a chem light. Those bad boys will glow for, you know, depending on which ones you get, anywhere from 4 to 12 hours. So look at, you know, some chem lights, look at bright flashlights, look at strobes, look at things like that. Dude, having had survived a really terrible vehicle accident where they couldn't find me because my truck was off the road, I can tell you that I wish I would have had a way to signal better than what I had, which was nothing.
Yeah. One of my new favorite things, and they're
super
small. Road
flares, by the way, were soaking wet, so they were useless.
Yeah, they don't burn very well. These new little solar lanterns.
Yeah.
I've got a couple. They're like $15. I picked the ones I have up at Walmart because the ones I had that were higher end, I lost off of the end of the hood of my truck because I was an idiot. It happens. You can get them that have got the high, low, strobe, and then some of them even have a red strobe in them. Mm-hmm. They're like $15-$20. Stick it on your dashboard. Let it charge up. And then if you need it, pull the little pluggy out, blow some air into it, and get a nice big light. It's nice and bright. Mm-hmm. Boom, signaling, done. Takes up no space, weighs almost nothing.
Mm-hmm. So what are some other things, John, that we have to consider in emergency? We've covered water.
Stay hydrated.
Emergency supplies, vehicles, communications.
Appropriate footwear and clothing.
How we leave the house
tired and sad most of the time.
Kind of my house. But how we leave our house to go prepare for the day and kind of pre-thinking through scenarios. There's some other big desert survival things I can think of.
Mess with the wildlife.
Don't mess with wildlife.
Don't mess with cactus. And know the wildlife in your area. I saw an interesting snippet on the Instagrams last night. A lady that I follow that lives out here, she was out hiking in southern central Arizona, like Tucson area, I assume. Stopped to take a break, leaned up against a rock, and on a shelf, not just about 20 feet from her, the fucking Mojave. Green Mojave rattlesnake.
They're nasty.
Just singing away. Mm. She got a good picture of it. I don't know how, because she said she ran for like 20 yards at a dead sprint in the opposite direction of this terrible, terrible critter. But know the critters in your area and know some first aid.
Know what to expect from them too.
Yeah. Know what they'll do. By the way, Mojaves will chase you. They're mean.
Mojaves are the only aggressive rattlesnake I've ever been around.
Yeah. They're terrible.
No.
And if you have a chance, kill it. Because rattlesnakes are proof that Satan exists, and we should do our very best to remove Satan from our world, regardless of your religious or political beliefs.
True enough. All right. We have more time to cover, you know, kits and what we carry and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, I think we covered
it. You can email us.
We covered it pretty well. Yeah, you can email us. If you disagree or you think we missed a really, really important major part of kind of desert survival and staying aware every day or staying alive every day, please email us and let us know. info@trainingaz.com. We love getting messages from our listeners, regardless of what they are. Sometimes they're fun, sometimes they're angry, and that's great. We're happy to have either kind. You can always, of course, get on our Facebook page and message us that way as well. Just go to the Arms Room. It's easy to find. All right, man. I think that kind of wraps it up for today. We're out of time. So remember, you can always bring us out to train with you. Hosting information is easy. Just email us again, info@trainingaz.com. We'll tell you about how to get us out to your area so that you can take some of our medical or some of our firearms classes, meet us in person, get our rants and bad attitudes in person up close.
Yeah, it's great. It's get the spittle. Great.
Yeah, get the full spittle effect as we're yelling. So remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and, of course, Redwire Gear. We're on there all the time. So
yes.
Check it out. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Check out the other shows that they have. Adam's show. What's it called again?
The Decision Hour.
Oh, right. That's right. The Decision Hour. The Decision Hour about what?
Philanthropy, entrepreneurship, kind of people telling their story on a decision that they've had to make that's changed their lives for the better. Helps other listeners figure out what they're doing and maybe helps them propel them to what it is that they want to do. Make that decision, get out there, do it.
Awesome. The second most popular show on Heroes Media Group.
Yep. Because ours is obviously
the first most popular. But there's what, 25 shows you've got now?
Pretty close, about 20 right now.
Yep,
there's two more that start August 1st. So.
Cool. So all kinds of shows you can go listen to as on the Heroes Media Group. That's what I meant to say.
Yep. Yeah.
All right, next week we're going to be talking. So we're not going to be live next week.
Yeah, we're doing our future, present of the past.
Yes, that's right. We're gonna go to the future to give you some information from the past,
and we're gonna present it to you in the present.
Yeah. So sorry, no live show next week, but you will be able to, of course, get it still at 10 o'clock. The download at 10 a.m. Mountain Standard Time, same as our live time. You'll be able to get the download so that you can listen to the show. You just won't be live. Next week we're gonna be talking about measuring the results of practice, and specifically firearms practice, like dry practice and live practice, and how to make all of that worthwhile.
Nice.
We did a show about this a couple months ago, and I got a lot of requests about doing this show that's more specific about actually measuring results. So we're going to be talking about that in the future.
Yes.
But actually, we're going to be talking about it in about 20 minutes.
It's still in the future.
But in the future.
But you're going to hear about it in the super future while you're in the present, but it'll have been made in the past.
Oh my gosh. Mind grenade. All right. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.